Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We've got a lot of fun Tottenham stuff to talk about tonight, so naturally Ben couldn't join us. But I am joined by Brian Ashlock, the podcast's other just, you know, unstoppable optimist. So we are here to talk about a very good week for Tottenham. Brian, are you hyped? Are you excited? Are you geeked?
Geeked, zooted, amped, whatever the words are. I don't know what the kids say. But yeah, no, 13 goals in the span of 3 days, 27 matches in like 9 days. Like, what a excellent like span of games for Tottenham Hotspur. And then the most recent two specifically were just absolutely insane.
Yeah, I found it. I mean, I'm sure some of this has to do with the fact that we're heading into an international break of a bunch of games that are probably ill-advised and I don't really care about. But like, I found it hard not to get a little bit carried away with how well those last two games went and sort of what that means for Tottenham's future. But we'll get into that as we get into this podcast. I think we can. I don't have much to say about this, but we should mention that Tottenham beat Maccabi Haifa 7-2. To qualify for the Europa League, so we're in the Europa League. I think, weirdly, this might be the best team we played in our qualifiers, but it was also the best team, the best we looked in our qualifiers. Maybe because they tried to actually attack us so we could beat the brakes off of them, I don't know. But it was nice to see us, especially after the way we talked about this last week, it was nice to see us qualify so comfortably.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that was the important thing, was to qualify. Like, honestly, if we would have won it ugly and, you know, it would have just wound up 2-1 or something, that would have been one thing. But, you know, we put 7 goals past them. Harry Kane got a hat trick. Like, I mean, it's kind of what you want to see. And, I mean, you're right. I think it's probably, you know, quality-wise, the best team that we played. But, I mean, one, we were at home, and two, they tried to come after us, and it just really, really didn't work for them. So we got into the group stage. We got three teams that we can definitely beat in the group stage, and that's really all that matters with the Europa League, is just getting through to the groups and then on to the knockouts.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't even think the travel's all that bad with these games in the Europa League. Brian, I'm sure in a second, as you furiously Google, you will come up with the locations of where these teams are, or not. But they're not that far. Honestly, the only thing that worries me is just, like, I don't know, traveling around all these countries in the time of COVID gives me a little bit of pause, especially with what we're seeing over here in America with the NFL, which admittedly has less to do with travel and more to do with teams being stupid. But, you know, that's the only disadvantage I can think of. This is that's some travel to places I'd rather not be going in terms of COVID, but it's not like England's all that great either. So, I mean, what the hell do we have to lose?
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm kind of like a big naysayer in terms of like what the actual effect of some of this travel stuff is, because, you know, like when we talk about, you know, long trips to, you know, Russia or Ukraine or whatever, they're not that much longer than like an East Coast to West Coast U.S. road trip, you know. We're not talking, you know, significantly more in terms of flight time or whatever. So, you know, we're one of the teams we're playing is, like, in Belgium. And so that's, like, a 60-minute flight or a 90-minute flight. You know, like, nobody is too far. But even if we had drawn, like, three Ukrainian teams, which isn't possible, obviously. But, you know, I wouldn't be concerned about the travel in terms of like fatigue and distance and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, we've got, who do we have? I'm trying to look it up. Okay, this is not cooperating with me. So
We're very, very professional and professional.
Yeah, very, very professional podcast. But yeah, these just aren't, you know, we don't have any trips to, like, the backwaters of Russia coming up. So it's like, it should be fine. Honestly, combined with how well we've been playing lately, it certainly has me sort of dreaming about winning the Europa League, which is sort of, much as we all bag on the Europa League, like, lifting that trophy at the end of the season would be pretty great. And I would be very excited to do that. And frankly, it might be a more secure way of getting into the Champions League. Except, we're going to win the league because we beat Manchester United 6-1 in just an utter thrashing. I mean, this is... I don't... This has got to be the best performance Spurs have had under Mourinho, right?
100%. Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know where to start with this match because there were so many good performances and so many good things that happened in it. So I think probably the best thing to do is start with the one bad thing, which was the penalty at the beginning. And, you know, you looked at the lineup and you saw the Davinson Dyer midfield or center defense, and you saw Aurier and Reguilón on as the fullbacks, and you're like, we're gonna give away a dumb penalty. I don't know who it's gonna be, but somebody's gonna give away a dumb penalty. And little did we know, it would be 2 minutes into the game. And it honestly wasn't a dumb penalty. Well, I mean, it was dumb in terms of, like, it was bad defending from Davinson Sanchez, but it was a definite penalty.
It was a little bit of a ticky-tack call, but, I mean, it was a penalty, especially when you look at a replay.
Yeah, and so...
But, of course, United gets a penalty 2 minutes into a game. Like, it's just very, like, in some ways, like, yes, it was an earned penalty, but it was also beyond parity. It's just like, of course Manchester United gets this.
Right, absolutely. And personally, seeing that 2 minutes into the match, you just immediately, like, are crestfallen. And you're like, this is how this game's going to go, huh? Like,
well, especially when so much, I don't know about you, but I feel like so much of United's, like, resurgence, especially after the restart. I know they played pretty well, but so much of it felt like the referees were just giving out penalties like candy at Old Trafford. And they it just felt like another day
the other
the
week
office.
After the final whistle. Like, come on. Like, yeah, of course. Like, and you and that happens in the second minute, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, sure. Why don't we just help them out? But it ended up not mattering because they're really bad and we were really good.
We punished, like, them almost immediately. Just,
yeah, literally everything that happened after the penalty was, you know, positive for Spurs. Was like, you know, I know we're going to talk about the sending off at a certain point, but I don't think it would mattered ultimately. Like, 11v11, we were better than them, and it was 2-1, and we definitely were going to score more goals.
They were, I think it is not an exaggeration to say they were rocking on their heels. It was not United. I mean, who knows what kind of change, you know, yes, you could have made different changes at halftime if you didn't have to, like, compensate for being a man down. Maybe that would have made a difference, but we looked by far the better team. I mean, that's, to me, what I find optimistic, and again, it's a small sample size, and I don't think these were tactical masterclasses necessarily, but I feel like this game and Chelsea in particular have been a little bit different from stuff we've seen from Mourinho, and maybe it's just a product of the personnel we suddenly have at our disposal, but it feels like we have outsmarted or outcoached the last two teams, at least Chelsea, and I mean, let's throw the Europa League game aside because that is what it is, but the Chelsea and United games, it felt like we had a very smart game plan that totally worked, and the other team wasn't able to compensate for it, and we were able to win those games, or at least draw one and take it to penalties, but it's felt like we've turned a bit of a corner, and maybe it's as simple as, like, he has two just wild fullbacks he can unleash, marauding up and down the flanks. I mean, certainly that was a big part of our game plan against United, but it just feels, I mean, this feels different than, like, say, how we played well under Mourinho last year, or even, like, that Southampton game where it was kind of like, you know, after the half, it was like, all right, keep it tight and let Kane and Son kill the other team.
Yeah, I think the thing that having two attacking fullbacks does for this particular system is it really allows us to create overloads on either side of the pitch. And it's something we weren't able to do when we're playing the one defending, one attacking fullback that we have been. And both Reguilón and Aurier overlap down the wings and allow you to get more numbers forward on the flanks. And it really just put United in really weird positions, and they didn't know what to do with the overloads. And then they also didn't know what to do with the midfield that we put out there, which I thought was... You know, look, on paper, Sissoko, Højbjerg, and Dembélé midfield is significantly better than anything we played last year. It's still a little ways away from ideal because you're including Sissoko in there. But in terms of what you needed that midfield to do against United, I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we're talking about, you know, I think if you put that Everton game aside, it's sort of... This team has looked increasingly good under Mourinho this year, and I think an underrated reason for that is we're actually giving Ndombele minutes. And he's getting into the side. And particularly with Mourinho, the way he sort of suckers in opposing teams and then quickly transitions the ball to the attackers, it kind of works really well for Mourinho's system. And it's a little... I mean, maybe it was just a fitness issue, but it's a little stunning to me that Mourinho didn't see this and sort of integrate him faster. I mean, we don't need to rehash that whole discussion, but it works so well that I'm just surprised it took us this long to get there.
Right, and Højbjerg has, you know, been increasingly effective. You know, he's not particularly flashy, he's not particularly dynamic, but he literally just is a defensive midfielder, and that makes such a big difference to our team. Like, you know, especially against United, where you had a midfield that had Pogba and Matic and Fernandez in it, Højbjerg was just consistently in the right place to break up play. And then he was able to distribute to the fullbacks or distribute to Ndombele or to move the ball forward on his own. And, you know, I don't think that he is like a superstar player or anything, but I think him probably more than anyone else in this team... It makes us work, you know, like, not to say that Kane and Son aren't, you know, vital to this team, but like, without the platform that Højbjerg gives us, we maybe don't get to this position where we're putting six goals past United.
Well, and I think the thing about Højbjerg that I think I've heard several Spurs fans talk about, and I know we've talked about on this podcast, was a bit of the hope with him was, okay, he's been a pretty good player at Southampton. Now let's see if he'll take a step up when he's around, you know, he's playing with better players at Spurs, you know, guys like Ndombele, Alderweireld, you know, some Kane, Son, all these other guys. And it seems like, I mean, it's early days, it's a small sample size, but it seems like he is. It seems like he's stepping up, which is real encouraging. And, I mean, it's you know, it's a two-way street. He does things that make our team better, but I think playing with those players is sort of a challenge he's responded really well to.
So I think we've shown remarkable restraint so far, and I want to give you the floor so that you can talk about Tottenham Hotspur's favorite son, yours and my favorite player, Eric Lamela.
Oh, what can I say about my beautiful, sharp-elbowed, sharp-featured, deep-eyed child, Eric Lamela? Just, you know, it's actually enormously to his credit that, you know, he has... made himself such an important part of this team. In some ways, it's kind of weird that we ever thought Mourinho would want to get rid of Eric Lamela, because he is, I mean, he's a little bit old, he's definitely injury prone, but like, he is very much a Mourinho type player. He works hard, he's a dirty bastard, he still has enough technical quality too to like pull off, you know, various, I mean, he's still like a good, he's a good attacker, he's good with the ball, he can do certain things. I mean, he probably holds on to the ball for too long and doesn't look for outlet passes as soon as he should. But he's just exactly the kind of player Mourinho wants in a lot of ways. And you saw it when he got Martial sent off. And, you know, I've heard people call this cynical and whatever. And it's like, yeah, sure, I don't give a shit. It's smart. I mean, it is like the kind of thing Mourinho's talking about in terms of wanting players to be smart about things. And, you know, Martial shouldn't hit him in the throat if he didn't want to get sent off. So
yeah, I think that's the thing is with the sending off is like, soccer fans, soccer players, we've all made this agreement that if you get hit in the face, like, you get to make a big deal out of that. Like, you know, it's not something where he got, like, he didn't get hit and then he made a meal. And look, you know, he's absolutely play acting a little bit.
Oh,
he's
a little, just a teeny tiny
just a little bit. Just a little. And he's absolutely making the most out of it. But that's the agreement that we all came to, is if you get hit in the face, you get to do that.
Well, it's funny because a lot of play acting in soccer, as cynical as a lot of it is, a lot of it is, referee, look at this thing that just happened. And, you know, in this case, he was drawing the referee's attention to a legitimate foul. You know, now should he have been given a yellow or set off for simulation or hitting Martial in the throat with his razor sharp elbows? I mean, who can say? You know, not me. You know, I'm not a referee. I didn't see it, so.
Look, the other rule is the second guy always gets caught. Like, that's true in American sports. That's true in European football. Like,
yeah.
Don't be the guy that does the second thing. And you know that sending off aside, United could have finished this game with 9 men.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they should have finished this game with 9 men. Luke Shaw should have been sent off for that foul on Mora. Baye should have been sent off for stamping on Kane. It's utterly ridiculous. Even when United's getting their asses kicked 6-1, they still get the benefit of the doubt from the referees.
The Baye one, like, I am willing to accept that maybe he didn't know what he was doing, but the Luke Shaw one to me is the most egregious challenge I have seen on a Spurs player in a long time. Like, you know,
it's the definition of a cynical foul. Like,
it's, yeah, and it's just like, and we talked about this in the writers' room when the foul happened. Like, that's not an automatic red card because it's not denial of a goal scoring opportunity. It's not like, you know, one of the guys that is more up on officiating said, well, it doesn't check all 4 boxes or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. He's nowhere near the ball. He looks directly at Lucas and goes, nah, I'm going to kick him. And like, it's just like he makes no attempt to play the ball. There's the only thing that can happen there is that somebody gets hurt.
But it's the same principle as denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity. He's gone. Like, that's,
yeah.
I'm not sure he's going to be in on goal, but like, Luke Shaw's looking at that and like, I can't keep up with this guy.
Yeah.
He's going to blow past me. I'm just going to fucking take him out. And he doesn't even pretend to play for the ball. It was awful. And Eric Lamella would have never gotten caught for doing something like that.
No, never. But you know, the other thing with Lamella is like, look, this was very much a reward to Lamella for having played well in the last few matches. And, you know, I think he thoroughly deserved to start. And I thought he played really well.
He made a nuisance of himself. He really caused problems for United. I mean, that first goal is like kind of a stupid goal, but it's there because Eric Lamella is in the United defender's face just making trouble. And like, yeah, like, just because United's dumb doesn't take away from the fact that like Lamella was smart enough and scrappy enough to like get in there, fuck up their shit, and make sure he was able to get the ball off for one of his teammates. And you know, we don't equalize that game, and who knows what happens if we don't equalize. Like, we erase their advantage almost instantaneously because Eric Lamella was making a nuisance of himself. And you know, in a lot of ways, this game was sort of a microcosm of everything good and bad about Lamella. Like, you know, like I said earlier, he doesn't lay the ball off the teammates as quickly as he should. He doesn't sort of recognize when he needs to, you know, he dribbles into other team, you know, he dribbles into a cul-de-sac of defenders too often. But at the same time, he, like, never stops hustling. He's always a nuisance. He's a smarter player than a lot of people give him credit for, as you saw with the Martial thing. It's just, he's a great play. I mean, he had a huge impact in this game. He got taken off at halftime, so he didn't get sent off.
And I mean, he's very much like a player that is a perfect Jose player. And, you know, we talked so much about when Jose came in about how, you know, Jose likes these hardworking number 10s who don't necessarily score, don't necessarily assist, but are guys that will put in the dirty work and will, you know, press high up the pitch, will, you know, win challenges, that sort of stuff. And we're like, oh, that can be Dele Alli, can be that player. Well, actually, you know who that player is. This is Eric Lamella.
Eric Lamella will do some shitty stuff to an Arsenal player and then, like, have a shitty agreed on his face as, like, the entire team tries to hold him back. Like,
Yeah. I mean, it's, look, it's, we both love Eric. Like, he was so good, you know, as was pretty much everybody else in this game. And like you said, we don't get it back into the game that quickly, if not for him. And we definitely don't have the upper hand, you know, from 2-1 on if we without him. So, I mean, for me, he was man of the match despite, you know, only playing 45 minutes.
I think it's hard to argue. I mean, he had a huge impact on, I mean, for good or for ill, he had a huge impact on this game. And it's just, it's really encouraging to see that he still has a place on Spurs. I mean, he's my favorite Tottenham player that I've ever watched. He's just, you know, and some of it's because the adversity he's gone through, some of it's because it's just the way he plays, but I really like Eric Lamela, and it's just very heartwarming for me to see that he still has an important role to play on this team in the year of our Lord 2020. I mean, it's just, it's great. It's great. He's not the player we thought we were going to get, but he's still been a very valuable servant of this club, and it makes me very happy to see him end games like this.
Yeah, and you know, look, you know, at a certain point, Gareth Bale will be back, and so who knows if this is like the lineup that Jose rolls with for bigger games. I mean, probably you'd like to see Lo Celso in for Sissoko in the midfield. And maybe you don't want.
Yeah, maybe that might be. Maybe. That might be.
Maybe, but you know, and you probably don't want Dyer Davinson. But like, you know, if this is the strategy that we want to, you know, deploy against bigger teams, against, you know, the Chelseas and Liverpools and Uniteds, I'm down for this. Like, that was fun. Like that. Like, it was a lot of fun in a way that I didn't expect a Mourinho team to be.
And I think, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but I really think that has to do with having these marauding fullbacks. You know, I mean, it helps that, like, I mean, we've documented our feelings on Ori over the years, but, like, when he's on, he's dangerous and kind of fun to watch, and Reguilon is just like, Jesus Christ, I mean, that guy is, like you said last week, he's a golden retriever. He's just running around out there chasing cars, full of energy, and, I mean, it's just fun as hell to watch him, and you could see how many problems he caused. I mean, we've all seen the nutmeg clips, but I mean, he was just causing problems for United all day. And it's, you know, God, you think about those guys on the flanks. It's just really exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, every match I watch Matt Doherty play fullback for Spurs, I appreciate Aurier more and more.
Man, you guys sold out on Doherty really quickly. Like, I don't know. I think. Aurier probably has a higher ceiling than Doherty, but I think Doherty's floor is a lot higher than...
Yeah, I mean, you know, who's given away 2 penalties already this season? I'll tell you who it is. It's Matt Doherty. It's not Serge Aurier.
The Serge Aurier defense front.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's I don't know. But I think, like, I don't know that this is something that Mourinho will deploy all the time. I don't know if he'll always go with the 2 attacking fullbacks, you know, and I don't think we'll see Eric Lamela starting a lot of games. But again, you know, when we have a midfield 3 that includes Højbjerg and Dembélé, and when we have Kane, Son, and somebody else in attack, like, that is a formula that is going to work.
Well,
and you just need to find a way to, you know, carry the ball forward enough to feed Kane and Son.
I mean,
and whether that comes through Lamela or the fullbacks or Gareth Bale or Sissoko or whatever the method of carrying the ball forward is, this team is going to score goals if Jose, like, takes the handbrake off just a little bit.
I think that's what's so exciting about this game to me. I mean, I don't want to get too carried away. It's one game. In the past, I mean, other than the restart, we have all expressed...
It's the greatest game Jose Mourinho has ever managed.
I think it's the highest scoring game he's ever managed, but we've all expressed skepticism in Solskjaer in the past. I don't want to, like, discount that. I think he's a pretty dumb manager, or is capable of being a pretty dumb manager. But at the same time, this is a United team. As bad as they've looked in this season, they looked really good at the end of last season. You're still playing guys like Paul Pogba. I mean, we looked really good. And then you consider the fact that it would be so easy to swap out Lo Celso for Sissoko and Bale for Lamela, as good as Lamela was, as good as Sissoko was in this game, honestly. But you just got to feel like you take this team and then you put those guys into it for those players, and holy shit, like, You know, I mean, maybe you don't want to do both of those things, because if you take LaMelo out, who's going to do the scut work up front? But, I mean, Kane probably, but you know, it's just like, God, you just think, I don't know about you, but like after this game, you know, especially with like Liverpool slipping and, you know, all these teams above us kind of having faceplate, City slipping as well, like you just start thinking about like, oh my God, like what if, you know, what if Gareth Bale is still Gareth Bale? What if, you know, what if we throw Lo Celso at this team? Like, holy shit, what could this team that did this to United today do?
Yeah, and I think the thing is that Jose is not going to allow us to play like this as much as we as fans would like. And so, like, I don't want to sound like I'm bummed or anything, or that, you know, that I'm taking away from this match, but, like, we're not going to get to play that open. We're not going to play against 10 men, you know. Like, Jose's just not comfortable with that style of play. And I think once we got up 3-1, he was like, all right, well.
Yeah, against 10 men. Against 10, yeah. 3-1 against 10 men, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
Fuck these guys. Like, they fired me.
Yeah, and if it was 3-1 against Liverpool and, you know, you're playing 11v11, you know, maybe he has a more conservative approach. And the same thing, you know, goes if we're playing Burnley, honestly, or anybody else in the middle of the league.
We see Mourinho fuck around, especially when he first got here, with a more offensive look than we would have expected from him. He talked, I mean, I don't want to put too much faith in what Mourinho talked about vis-a-vis scoring goals, because every fucking manager says shit like that. But, and he's just telling people what they want to hear, but, like, I don't know, it seems like there's some level of commitment, there could be some level of commitment to attacking play. We've certainly seen it in the league this year. I mean, outside of that Everton game, we have just gone at other teams. I mean, that Southampton game was an example of that. I mean, I know we didn't create a ton of shots, but we still, like, beat their brains in. Newcastle was definitely an example of that. And then you look at what we did against United. And, you know, I know we were up a man and, you know, things sort of went our way. But, shit, I mean, it's encouraging. And I think you're right. I think Mourinho is not going to play like this all the time. But, like, there's a lot of goals in that lineup. And like I said, if Gareth Bale is just, like, anything approximating his old self, that could be a very, very scary front line. I mean, I keep thinking about, you know how there's always those, like, those sort of slightly over the hump free agents in sports that people convince themselves, like, ah, they're not getting any good, we shouldn't sign him. You know, like Cam Newton in the NFL, where it's like, ah, why would we want to get him? And then as soon as you get him in there, because there's like a few questions around him, and as soon as he gets in there, he starts kicking ass, and there's this, like, and that's what I keep thinking, like, what if that's like Bale? Like, okay, he's not like 2015 Gareth Bale, but he's still Gareth Bale. And, like, what happens if you stick that in that front line? Like, it might not matter if Mourinho's our manager. I'm getting wildly carried away right now, but it's hard not to after that United performance. It was really fucking good.
Yeah, and I think the thing that if you're going to hope that Mourinho is going to allow this team to play more attacking, if you're going to hope, the thing that you have to look at is, look, we had more of the ball in these last few league games. We had more shots. Jose Mourinho teams don't have 20-something shots. Jose Mourinho teams don't have the ball for 68% of the game, or 64, whatever the number was. Like that's not how Jose generally wants his teams to play. And that's what we've been doing. Like, you know, that's what we did to Chelsea. That's what we did to United. Like,
and, like, say what you want about United. Like, you know, they're kind of shit this year. They've like we've said what we think of Solskjaer, but, like, you know, I would expect generally with a team with those players, Mourinho to not be this attacking against that team. And maybe it was just circumstances kind of conspired, but I still think we came out guns a blazing. And, you know, I would expect even this United team, like, Mourinho to approach them a lot more cautiously than he did. Because it's one thing to do that to Newcastle. I know we drew that game, but we still had a gajillion shots against them. But, I mean, we were putting up numbers against United, and I just wouldn't have expected us to do that. And, again, maybe that's just game state. I really don't want to get too carried away, but it's hard not to.
Well, and then the fun thing is that we've got four kind of bad teams coming up. Like, we've got West Ham, Burnley, Brighton, West Brom in our next four matches. And off the back of United and Chelsea in the Europa League match, you're like, all right, how many goals can we score in those four games? Like, you know, like that's that's what I'm excited for, is, you know, to put some of the early season stuff, the Everton match, the Newcastle match where we really got screwed, and, you know, to put that behind us and just see if we can win these next four and go into the Manchester City and Chelsea league matches, like having won five straight matches, like, or, you know. Like, I think that's what we need, is we now need a period of, like, sustained momentum in the league.
Yep, I agree.
Because we really talked about that all, like, all last spring before, or, well, like, winter. Honestly, since, like, the beginning of 2019. Sorry, I don't remember how years work. It's the pandemic. But, like, since, like, the end of the Pochettino era, we kept looking at the schedule and going, oh, look, like, the games are set up. Like, it's three easy teams. Like, they're 17th, 16th, and 14th. Like, we should win these three. And then we wouldn't. And we just never could get a sustained period of momentum. And then Jose had, like, fits and starts of good runs, but, like, never until Project Restart didn't really put anything real together.
Even there, it was really the very end of Project Restart. I mean, if we'd just been a little more consistent at the beginning of when we came back from COVID, like, I mean, we could have finished top four, but we just, you know, we dropped some bad points early on.
Yeah, and so to get a run now, early in this season, I think that would be huge.
So, I think it's worth remarking on two of our... I mean, it's almost what we expected at this point, but Son looks great again. And I don't know if Mourinho was lying about his injury to cover for a substitution that bit him in the ass, or if it just wasn't as bad as he thought it was, but I'm sure I am glad he was back for United. And apparently United were shocked to see him in the lineup, so... You know, maybe they really are too dumb to breathe up there, but it was, you know, I thought Son looked great again, and I don't know about you, but there was something very encouraging of when, like, Kane released that ball and just seeing Son just dash past the United defense, which is like, oh, yeah, he's doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked us to have pulled him earlier if, like, the injury thing was actually real, which I am very skeptical that it actually was. But yeah, I find it funny that United, having experienced Jose Mourinho firsthand, were surprised that Heung-min Son played. And you know, maybe that's not just Jose, but maybe that's also, like, you know, that's Heung-min Son. Like, he wants to play every match. Like, we saw in the Amazon documentary, like, he didn't want to go get a scan on his elbow because he's like, if I get a scan, I'm not going to be able to play. So who knows how serious the hamstring issue was, or if it was gamesmanship from Jose, or what the actual deal was. But, you know, it worked out great for us.
I mean, if he was to engage in some, like, Bill Belichick level lying about injuries, like, fine. Like if, yeah, Mourinho is going to engage in morally dubious behavior, we should find a way to make it work for us.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, he maintains his pace at the top of the goal-scoring charts. He's still, you know, tied for first in the league, like, with Calvert-Lewin, which is weird. But, you know, like, and, you know, him and Bale continue to, or him and Kane continue to link really well, and who knows what him and Kane and Bale will do, or... it's just an exciting attack, and I know that we've had Kane and Son, like, before.
No, but how long has it been since both have been? Like, that's the other thing I want to talk about. Like, because I think we take it for granted, because we spent, like, a year fucking talking shit about Harry Kane, justifiably so, talking shit about Harry Kane, especially on this podcast. And shit, it looks like, I mean, I think on the Extra Inch, I think it was Wendy said that this might be the best form of his career, and I wouldn't go that far, but he looks, I mean, any sort of thought I had of Kane being past it, you know, I think his body might not hold up like it used to, but, I mean, he looks real, real fucking good right now.
I think what this early season has done for me is it has given me confidence that Harry Kane can adapt his game to be the kind of player that he needs to be at this age, given his health issues, given, you know, the minutes that he has to play and everything. I think that, you know, all the assists, which he's up to like five now, I think, You know, I think that dropping deeper to get on the ball and spray passes, I think, you know, I think he is starting to figure out what his body is capable of, figure out what it is that Jose Mourinho is looking for as a striker. And then he's also still succeeding in getting his own chances, which I think was one of the, like, you know, look, you had two concerns about Harry Kane. You had the first concern was, like, can he continue to do it? Is he still healthy enough to continue to run, continue to do all the things that he used to do? And I think that we've learned that, yes, he is. He can do those things. He probably shouldn't be playing 180, 270 minutes in a given week, but he can do those things. And the other thing is like, he can also still do all the old Harry Kane stuff where he just finishes crazy shots and he gets on the end of good chances in the penalty area. And, you know, he converts from the penalty spot. And, you know, that is the Harry Kane stuff that we got so used to doing and that we didn't see at the end of last year because he was trying, I think because he was trying to make adjustments or because he was too hurt to do those things or whatever the case may have been, he now appears to have resolved the situation.
Well, that you're right. Like, he seems to have changed his game in some ways, but that, for, I think it was his first goal in the game, the one that Son passed it back to him, sort of squared it to him at the top of the box. Like, and that felt like a vintage Harry Kane goal. It was in the right place and put, like, a solid strike on target that De Gea couldn't get back around for. It was just, God, it's so much fun to watch him be good again. And I think that's, again, we talked about, I think we didn't, you know, when we were doing our sort of preseason assessments, we weren't sort of fully accounting for, well, what if we integrate Ndombele into the team and use him well? And I think we kind of, you know, I think we talked about, oh, well, if this team needs to be good, then Harry Kane needs to be back to his best self. And, you know, I think maybe myself and, you know, I don't know, I can't speak for you, but certainly for myself, like, I was a little skeptical we'd see that, and we're seeing it right now. Like, Kane is very, very good, and it is just an utter pleasure to watch, and I am just, like, rock hard at the idea of him, Son, and Bale just, like, marauding around other teams, you know, yeah. Opposition halves, like...
I think if we're talking about skepticism, I was much more skeptical of Jose actually committing to using Tanguy and Ndombele.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if nothing else, what these last couple weeks have solidified for me is that he's going to play him. You know, whether it's for 60 minutes or for a full 90, he's going to be on the pitch.
And Ndombele's fitness issues have one way or another gotten to the point where Mourinho's not mad about it anymore. Like,
yeah, and I mean, look, we went through years of, you know, Moussa Dembele could go like 75 minutes, and that was like it. You know, so if that's the thing, if it's, you know, if Tanguy and Ndombele can give us 60 to 75 minutes in a given match, and then we have to bring on Sissoko, okay, like, as long as we're doing fine in those first 75, like, I you know, I think that's fine. And so I'm just happy that we are not only using him in, like, scrub games, which is kind of what I think we all thought was happening at the beginning of the season, but now he's getting starts against United and playing well.
And playing most of the match. I mean,
yeah.
It's fun as shit to watch. I hope we keep it up. I really hope we keep this up. And I'm just excited for, I mean, you know, I really hope Bale comes into the team in the West Ham game, because, like, if Gareth Bale just embarrasses West Ham this year, like, all, totally worth it. Whatever we paid for it, if all he does this year is embarrass West Ham twice, like, thank you, Gareth. Like, that's all I want out of him. Like, anything else is gravy. And I think we're going to get a lot more than that, but anything else is gravy.
Yeah, I just,
It's honestly, like, Alistair Gold puts out these reports about how impressive Bale is in training and how he's inspiring the other players. And I think Gold in particular is very much like a mouthpiece for the club. But, like, I can't help but get excited reading about that. It's just like, I know what he's doing, and I know what the problems are, and I know what to be afraid of. But, like, the combination of, like, my Spurs lizard brain and how well we've played for the last, like, 2 weeks. It's just, it's hard, very, very hard not to, like, let my head go there. And, you know, if Bale comes in after the international break or whenever he's due back and just, like, hits a screamer or has a really good game, like, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to contain myself.
No, I mean, look, if Gareth Bale scores in his debut against, or I guess, does it count as a debut? His second debut, whatever we call it? Like, if he scores against West Ham on his debut, I don't know if I'll be able to speak for a week. Like, I'll lose my absolute mind. Like, it'll be amazing.
It's going to be so good. I'm very, very excited about it. So I want to talk about something else that I think is fueling, I know it is for me, I'm guessing it is for you, something that's fueling my optimism about Spurs is, I think Spurs, even under our best at Pochettino, have been a thin team for a while now. I think even when we were challenging for leagues under Pochettino, arguably part of the reason we never won those leagues was because we were a very thin team, and we made efforts to address this in some ways that didn't work out, mostly I'm thinking of Janssen, but fundamentally we kept a very tight, tiny squad, and now that's, I don't know when it happened, because it felt like we had a thin squad, but you turn around and you just look at, you know, we've got Kane and Vinicius, we've got, on the left, we've got Son and Bergwijn, on the right, we got Bale, Lamella, and Moura. In the center of the pitch, we've got, like, Lo Celso, Dele Alli, Højbjerg, Sissoko, Ndombele, Harry Winks, and I guess Gedson, if you want to throw him in there. At left back, we got Reguilon and Davies. At center back, we got Tanganga, Sanchez, Alderweireld, Dyer. And right back, we've got Doherty and Aurier. At a keeper, we've got Lloris and, I guess, Joe Hart. So that maybe we've totally solved our depth. But my point is, that is, like, the deepest Spurs team I can remember seeing. That is genuinely ridiculous. I mean, how many players we have. I mean, that is, like, I don't know if we, I mean, aside from Bale and Reguilon, maybe, like, we didn't have, like, a blockbuster window. But if nothing else, we put some real depth into the squad. And I don't know, when we talk about things like winning the Europa League or maybe winning a cup competition, like, I was kind of skeptical because it's been such a stretch on our squad the last couple of years, but I do know Jose handles those competitions well. And then you look at that, you look at that squad I just read out. I mean, there is a lot of back. I mean, we should be able to engage in a lot of rotation with this squad. We should be able to keep a lot of people healthy with how deep we are. It's frankly nuts.
Yeah, you know, I think we had a really good transfer window. And I don't think, I think, like you said, there weren't a lot of signings that blew you away or that are, you know, aside from Gareth Bale, we didn't sign like a world-class player or anything. But this was the kind of window we needed. And I mean, you know, if you're going to be a pessimist about it, you say we needed this window two seasons ago. But we got it now, and if you'd have told me at the beginning of the season, of the transfer window, that we would sign a right back, a left back, a defensive midfielder, a backup striker, and Gareth Bale, I'd have been like, yeah, sign me up for that.
You might be able to throw a young center back in by the end of all this.
Yeah, and that's really the one area, if you look at the team, where you're like, we kind of missed out on strengthening. And now, look, you have options. You have Davinson, Dyer. You have Tanganga. You have Alderweireld. But, you know, you'd probably like one more experienced, you know, quality player there. And I don't know that the kid from Swansea, Joe Rodon or whatever, I don't know that he is, like, that guy. Like, I don't know if he's more of, like, a Juan Foyth-esque player where you're someone that you're hoping can develop. You know, I think what you would have wanted is Skriniar or someone of that nature who was, you know, ready-made to come in and play, you know, Champions League, you know, Premier League minutes. I don't think any of us thought we were going to sign two fullbacks in this window. I don't think any of us thought we were going to re-sign Gareth Bale. So I'm pretty pleased overall. And
I didn't think a lot of people thought we'd sign a backup striker, and yet here we are, like...
Yeah, and I mean, we talked a little bit about this guy, Vinicius, last week, and, you know, look, I have no idea how good he actually is. I've read so many things about him in the last week or so. I've watched so many highlight clips of him, because why wouldn't you? And I still am no closer to having any understanding of whether he is, you know, the next big thing, or if he is Vincent Janssen, or what his deal is. I read a piece in The Athletic, I think it came out today, about, like, you know, he was very rarely involved in build-up in goals at Benfica. I think the stat was, like, something like 56 of his 57 shots in, like, league play, like, his shot was like the only touch he had in the move. Like, so, you know, he's not going to be Harry Kane where he's, you know, dropping deep and is the focal point, but like, he's also a big, strong boy and can be a striker. So, like, he, you know, I don't, and he looks to be mobile. So, you know, he's an improvement over Llorente in that way, in that he can move. Hopefully, he is an improvement over Janssen in that he will score goals. And, you know, he's an improvement over, you know, Son or Lucas in that he's an actual striker who is capable of, you know, being a number nine, being a hold-up player if he needs to be.
Well, the thing about him, and we talked about this last week a little bit, but he's cheap. He is, I mean, he's absolutely a gamble in that we don't know, like you said, all that stuff you said, we don't know if he's going to be ready for prime time. He's had a super weird career path. He's a Mendes client, which makes me suspicious. But at the end of the day, like, you know, okay, we pay this guy like $5 or $6 million for a year, and he's like, what's the worst case scenario? I mean, Llorente minus maybe, like, whatever. We get a backup striker who, if there is anything I am capable, if all he does is take away garbage Europa and League Cup minutes from Harry Kane's plate, like, probably worth whatever we're paying him just to do that. Now, hopefully, well, also, he's better than that, but
to put him on in for the last 30 minutes when you're thrashing Burnley or Aston Villa away or whoever, like, you know, it would have been nice if he had been on the bench for this United.
Yes.
Bench, so that you could have yanked Kane and put him on. So, you know, like that's to avoid having Harry Kane out there in garbage time when he can get hurt because he doesn't know how to not be a tryhard. You know what I mean? Like that is the value of Vinicius. And then also, like you said, the Europa League and the cup minutes and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not under any illusions that we will, at the end of this loan, like, pay $36 million for this guy.
We might. If he's a decent backup, that's not a bad price.
For a 25-year-old, like, he'd have to go nuts this year. Like to me, like, if he scores, like, 6 goals and,
I think if he scores a couple, I think if he scores, like, 10 goals this year and looks competent, Spurs would be more than happy to pay 36 for a guy who's happy to sit on the bench behind Harry Kane.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. I just don't think that's the kind of money that I would drop on this guy. I think you could maybe negotiate a fee for him.
I would hope that you're right. But I think there's a value. If they find a guy who is decent and willing to sit on the bench behind Harry Kane, like if that turns out what it is, then, like, fuck it. That's worth it.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, even if we're just continuing to approach the Jose Mourinho era as, like, short-termist and you know, win now type of thing, Vinicius accomplishes that because he allows you to rest your best player, your star player, and he allows you to, you know, potentially score goals when he's not on the pitch if he gets injured or, you know, if you're just playing without him for a given match. And we didn't have that option last year. And, you know, for the important goals that Llorente did score and the important roles he had in other goals that were big for Spurs, he didn't really ever offer that much, you know, like, you know, there wasn't, we always talked about the shambling corpse of Fernando Llorente, and it's just like, that's what we got. Like, he stood out there and then occasionally a ball would go in off his hip or his arm or whatever, you know, like, that's what we got from Llorente. And at the very least, this kid looks like he can move around.
I mean, I think the thing that you got from Llorente that, who knows what you're getting from him, and it's arguable how valuable this is. I think you could put Llorente in a big spot, and he wasn't afraid of it. Like, I think, sure, you know, you throw him in a big Champions League match, he's like, okay, like, yeah, let's do it. And he, you know, and he performed on those. Honestly, arguably, it was the only place he performed. It was like all our best memories of Fernando Llorente are either high leverage situations that he got put into, or that time he tried to fight all of West Ham by himself, which was also pretty great. But, like, you know,
maybe Vinicius will try to fight all of West Ham.
Maybe. He would be well advised to. That should be his first move in a Spurs shirt. But it's just, it's like a lot of these other signings. It's like getting a Doherty. It's like, it's a decent price. It's a good gamble. And it means that we aren't going to have to, like, just kill our squad and run them down like we did last year. And I think if you look at some of the reporting, a big reason we had the window we did was Mourinho went to Levy and was like, we cannot have an injury crisis like we had last year again, not if you want to compete for things. And he's not wrong, especially we're in the Europa League this year. I mean, that's I mean, I think this fixture congestion is going to be brutal for everybody. But if you're in the Europa League, that's a whole extra round of shit you have to deal with. I'm glad that we have all these guys, and I hope that we see some real rotation. And if initial results are any indication, I mean, Davies sure looked like he had a fire under his ass when he played against Chelsea. And he came on and won that penalty against United when the game was over. That was pretty funny. Aurier certainly looks a lot more. I mean, again, we might be just looking for things that, you know, this might just be confirmation bias, but I certainly think Aurier's looked a little bit more interested than he used to now that he's got, you know, real competition on the team.
Aurier had a lot of competition at PSG and he never looked that interested. Yeah, so I'm not confident that'll be a thing that continues, but yeah, we can totally hope for that. But the other thing is that, like, if we're going to talk about negative things this window, is we didn't really move on a lot of players. And we still have questions surrounding, like, what are we doing with Danny Rose?
Eating his contract is what we're doing with Danny Rose. Like,
yeah, where's the Dele Alli situation? And, you know, like I said on the last show, I think I'm happy to move on from Dele Alli if the price is right.
Yeah, well, and price ain't going to be right now, so...
Yeah, so, but, like... Also, we're kind of in limbo on him, so, like, what are we necessarily doing? I mean,
you hope this is like Ndombele. Like, Mourinho felt the need to, like, feud with him for whatever dumb fucking reason, and now Dele will get with the program and work his way back into the squad. Because, I mean, that's the thing you want to see, is you want to see, like, a talented enough squad that, like, oh, we're not going to play Lo Celso or, you know, Ndombele this week. Let's play Dele. Like, you know, it's like where there's not a huge drop-off, where you have a bunch of quality players vying for time. You know, I mean, hopefully, like you know, with between the restrictions that COVID have put on this team, everyone, like, we've seen the difficulty with moving on. That a guy like, you know, Mourinho is going to have no choice but to reintegrate Dele. And this is all just some dumbass motivational scheme, but who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, look, we did do some good business, I think, with loans. You know, the Sessegnon loan to Hoffenheim, I think, is interesting.
Yeah, especially, we've told it, we deliberately sent him somewhere where he'll get minutes as a left back or a left wing back. So it seems like, but if you, all the reporting seems to indicate that this is actually a move towards his future, and maybe it's, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, was that in his last year at Fulham, they kind of played him as a forward more often than they had, so... Maybe between that and the muddle with Pochettino last year, it was kind of confused as to what his future... I know we were never sure what role he was supposed to have on Spurs, and it seems like they've settled. They want him to be a left-back. I'm a little interested that they seem... We seem to have more of a eye on the future of some of our players in terms of the loan market this year, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, we Oliver Skip going on loan to the championship. Like, I didn't realize Skip was still 19. Like, he's still a teenager, and now he's basically getting to play, you know, 40 something games for Norwich in the championship, which is, that's exactly what he should be doing. If he's good enough to be on the bench for a Premier League team and, like, play some, like, he might as well be getting consistent minutes in the championship. I think that's great for his development. And the same thing with Juan Foyth, who's going to, you know, a La Liga team in Villarreal. Granted, one managed by Unai Emery, so... But, you know, he's going to play minutes there. He's certainly... I don't know if he's a nailed-on starter, because I don't know what Villarreal's center-back situation is, but he's certainly going to play more there than he is here. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's not always necessarily about development, and hopefully that is what these are, is that Skip and Foyth and Sessegnon come
back. I mean, I think
Foyth
is clearly being sold, but it's a weird COVID market. But it seems like Sessegnon is not being sold.
But, I mean, look, the hope is that they go to these places and play well, and they come back improved players. And whether that then means that you sell them for more money, or that they are integrated back into your team and have improved by virtue of having played a lot of first team minutes, either way, it works out well for Spurs. There's still some players, because the EFL window is still open, that we could send out on loan. I think it's interesting that we haven't done anything with Tanganga, that we haven't done anything with getting rid of Danny Rose.
I think Tanganga, there's an injury issue there, but I think it's telling that, you know, I think he's using him. It's just an issue of when's he fit. But yeah, Rose seems to be not in the plans for anyone, and I don't know if he's just being difficult about a move or we just can't. I suspect Rose is another victim of the COVID market where just like he's not the type of teams that might take a risk on a guy like him just don't have the money to take a risk on a guy like him.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the market is for, you know, a Jack Clark, or even though rumors now are that we're going to keep him around because, you know, he's inspired by Gareth Bale and really impressing Jose Mourinho and whatever. But, you know, like, I think that's the only thing that I would have liked to see us do better job of this window is moving on some of the players that we didn't see a future for. And whether that was Danny Rose, whether that was Aurier, who seems to have established that he does still have a place in the squad, whether it was...
Yeah, you know, to the point where there's rumors about him getting an extension.
Yeah. And, you know, Sissoko or Winks, like, maybe one of them could have gone somewhere. Like, maybe you could have done something with... you know, Lamella or Lucas, but you know, I don't know. But I think that's the only thing if you're going to look at negatives from this window is that we just didn't accomplish some of the getting rid of some of the guys that we needed to, so much so that, you know, we have to leave players out of the Europa League squad.
Yeah, well, what encourages me about the window is we seem to have been willing to take advantage of a buyer's market. You know, we seem to be willing to dig deep a little bit and, you know, do what it takes to sort of really get a bunch of depth into this squad. It's just really encouraging and fun, and, you know, we're going to win the league, and we're going to win the Europa League, and we're going to win the League Cup, and we're going to win the FA Cup, and our quadruple is going to be extremely satisfying.
Absolutely. I mean, it'll be Jose's first quadruple, and it'll be amazing.
I was thinking, and again, I don't think we're going to win the league, but I was thinking...
What if Everton win the league?
Ugh, yeah, well, I was about to say sooner or later someone there's that is a thin squad, and sooner or later someone's got to get hurt. But it didn't matter for Leicester. If Everton win the league by 1 point over us, I think that might be the angriest I will ever be in my life after that fucking Newcastle 100%. Game. But if Mourinho won the league with Spurs, that might be the most. I don't think he'll ever be more obnoxious than if that happened. If he won the league with this team, like.
Absolutely. But I think the best part of it would be is, like, all of the Spurs fans that hate Jose Mourinho, how they would have to, like, very, very firmly sit astride the fence for that. Like, well, yeah, no, you look, it's great to have won the league, but I just really don't support what Jose Mourinho stands for. And I really think that it might hurt Ben Daniels to a really severe degree.
You know, I think the league or like the Champions League would be the kind of things that would transcend that for him, but something like the Europa League I feel like would like really hit that sweet spot.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I don't know. But yeah, no, it's easy to feel good about Tottenham Hotspur going to an international break. Honestly, it's fucking nice as shit to win a big match going into an international break. It's not like we haven't done this before, but it sure feels like we ever do this.
Ultimately, I think I feel better now than I did at the beginning of the season.
We've looked good. Okay, aside from the Plovdiv match, every game since the Everton game, we've looked good.
Yeah.
Or at least, like, decent. Like, you know, the Europa League qualifiers were kind of... But, like, we've looked good in these matches, and it's starting to form a trend. It's probably too early to read too much into it. But you could see the start of a trend, and it's really encouraging, and it's really exciting, and maybe we're just clinging to, like, you know, our expectations are so low in a lot of ways that we're just clinging to whatever hope we can find, but it's just really fun to watch, and I hope it keeps up.
Yeah, and like you said, this is like an actual deep squad that you can look at, and you can be like, all right, we can handle bumps in the road, we can handle fixture congestion, that sort of thing. Like, I think that squad construction wise and then just results based wise, this is the best I've felt about Tottenham in a while.
Since we bought Lo Celso, maybe? Like,
yeah, no, I really felt really good after buying Lo Celso and Ndombele, but then like shortly thereafter
I went, you know, that didn't last very long. Yeah, no, it's you know, it was a really good result. It's a really good team, and, you know, you hope this is the start of something kind of special or exciting. And you hope that it is a false dawn for Everton and not us.
Yeah. So I really wish we had played Everton, like, a few more games into the season.
And I think it is telling, and again, that was their first game with a lot of new players, but, like, we did not look good in that game, but also Everton didn't, like, batter us to death. Like, I mean, I know they should have scored that goal that Rickarlison ran on, too, but, like, they got a goal off of, I know they created some chances after that, but they got a goal off a very poorly defended set piece. And, you know, it was what it was, but, I don't know. I just feel so much better about this team than I did that day. And, you know, I'm excited to see where they go. I'm excited. You know, it's sort of nice to have the international break and that we go into it with, you know, good feelings. But I kind of wish we could just keep that momentum rolling and, you know, we had a game this week.
Well, I mean, look, best case scenario, next week we're sitting here talking about how we're very confident that Gareth Bale is going to make his Tottenham Hotspur
re-debut. Oh, yeah. No, he's jogging and training outfits now. It's like, you know, when he comes back, that's going to be the dopamine hit straight to my brain that I need.
Yeah, I just really wish he had a different haircut. I wish he'd just gone away from the top knot or man bun thing, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah, I saw that picture of him and Mourinho talking, and I was just like, what would be the first thing my, like, 2012 self would have noticed about that? Would it be Mourinho in a Spurs jacket? Would it be Bale's back in a Spurs jacket? Or would it have been like, what happened to Gareth Bale's hair? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's the hair, definitely.
Well, if we win the league with Gareth Bale this year, we're going to have to... We're all going to have to grow our hair out like Gareth Bale to celebrate. You know, just we're all going to have to get top knots on here on Wheelie Dealer Radio.
I would do it if we won the league.
I mean, I was going to get a tattoo. I was going to get a tattoo if we won the Champions League. So,
you know, why not?
Ugh. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
And you can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079. Don't forget to follow our new podcast Twitter account, WDR, as in Wheel of Dealer Radio, WDR Podcast. And don't forget to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Be very nice to us and improve our rankings. So on behalf of Brian, on behalf of Ben, who couldn't be bothered to join us tonight, and of course on behalf of Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Skipjack. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.